It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch. Good to have you here. As we continue on our 13 things, we're doing one thing, one thing a day. And this is regarding the 13 things mentally strong people don't do. So we're doing a characteristic a day until we go through all 13 of them. And so yesterday was they don't waste time feeling sorry for themselves. Today is they don't give away their power. Oprah Winfrey is the example here. Amy Morin is the one who put this together. Amy Morin uses Oprah Winfrey as an example of someone with a strong grip on their power. Winfrey grew up dealing with poverty and sexual abuse, but chose to define who she was to be in life by not giving away her power, meaning she doesn't play the victim. A lot of us play the victim. So when you play the victim, you give away your power. Doesn't that make sense? So mentally strong people do not give away their power. All right, good things happening. First on the show today, we have our regular contributor and as well as attorney for workers and consumers, Norm Blumenthal. Norm Blumenthal is what you call a super attorney. He was inducted in Southern California. His firm looks out for working class stiffs, right? He looks out for the little guy, takes care of workers and consumers, and he's been doing this for a long time, and he is one of the voices out there pushing for better wage, better working conditions.
Happy New Year to everybody, 2016. By the end of this year, we'll have a new president. We've had President Obama in office for 8 years, and things are pretty good. He brought us out of a deep recession, could have been a depression, and here we are creating jobs, and we've got to stay the course. I like the idea that today's theme is don't give away power. In an election year, every working stiff out there, you and me and everybody, we have a lot of power, and our power, the power in the people, is the power to vote. So yes. Today, the first lesson that we all need to learn from each other is register to vote and exercise your right to vote. That is your right, and you need to exercise it for whoever you're going to vote for. My job here is to explain to you why, for the next president, you need to stay the course with the Democrats and in the White House because of the good things that they've done for you, in spite of what you may think. But don't get confused with all the social issues. Just look in your pocketbook. Vote your pocketbook. You know, the money talks in your pocketbook. We've now passed and approved the earned income tax credit, and that's good for another couple years, and that puts more money in people's pocket. And we're all consumers. Remember, 70% of the GDP, that's 70% of the gross domestic product, is consumer spending. And that's you and me and everybody out there. We have the power in our pocketbook. We need to spend, and we need to spend locally. Stay local, buy local, hire local, be local. That's the theme. And don't be afraid of immigrants, all this hate speech. Get away from it. We all are all immigrants. There's nobody out there that's listening here that wasn't a son or a daughter of an immigrant, unless you're an American Indian. And we all came at one point or another, and our parents at one point or another, our grandparents or our great-grandparents or our great-great-grandparents came here from another land and settled. And when they came here, they spent money. Immigrants spend money. They buy your goods and services here. They are good for your local economy. They have come from, these immigrants from Syria have come from a terrible place. They've been bombed with barrel bombs. They're escaping with their lives. They want a new life. they want to go to school, and you know, there's always a few rotten apples in every bunch. We all know that, but let's not spoil the whole bunch by a few. We got to look at the big picture, and let's embrace everybody that comes to this country. You know, as the Beatles always said, when you want money for minds that hate, brother, you're going to have to wait. And so when you look at this election, you look at this election and all the people that want money for hate, just forget about these people.
That's right.
Forget about
them. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because so many people, this hate comes from fear. Oh, they're using fear to motivate you to, you know, think that you're going to lose your job or that you're going to lose some kind of freedom. And that's how they get you. The reality is that if you give into that fear, you're going to give into that hate, whatever, and you're going to make the wrong choice. Let's look at it, like you said, logically. What's the best course of action? What's the best way that I can protect myself? And that is to vote with my pocketbook. And I like what you said there. You have a duty, an obligation to get out there and vote. If you're not going to get out there and vote, then you have nobody to blame but yourself.
And you have to protect this economy. Remember, these immigrants, they don't have housing. They don't have refrigerators. They don't have clothes. They don't, you know, barely have shoes. They don't have cars. They don't have anything. They don't have their local school. They need all of this, and they're going to spend their money locally. So let's embrace people that come to this country like our forefathers did and everybody before us. They all embrace one or more of our ancestors. So don't act like, you know, you are, you know, everybody out there that you own everything. You don't. The Indians owned it all, and we took it from them. We took it from them. And nobody can argue about that. And so life goes on. So now we got to accept the fact that we need to embrace everybody. And you veterans out there, I especially want to talk to the veterans out there. You know, I think you have to be really careful to avoid these Republicans that got us into this mess in the Middle East, and stay the course with the Democrats, because the Democrats are committed not to put any divisions of U.S. troops on the ground, and that's real important to every veteran out there. We don't want any American soldier other than special forces, special ops, and those that are highly trained individuals. We don't want to have targets. President Obama's right. If we start going in there and we turn this into a religious war, we're only going to have ourselves to blame. We have to stay away from that. And the idea that that this is a religious war, it isn't. They've hijacked this religion. They've hijacked the Muslim religion and turned it into hate speech. And you know, they're just a limited, small minority, and they should be ignored. They're not people that should belong in any religion. They're sick, sick human beings that need to be wiped off the face of this earth by the forces of good, and so we can go back to an economy that's booming for everybody. That's
absolutely
what we're doing.
You know what? And I'm glad you brought that up, because look at this. When you to put this in perspective, you know, there's like 2 billion Muslims out there, and what we're talking about is not even a percentile. Now, the small group of people are obnoxious, they're ruthless, they are a loathsome people, and they need to be dealt with. And I'm a big believer that we can deal with these guys, as you mentioned, with special ops and with technology. We have the drones, we have the technology to deal with this stuff, and I think that's the smarter way to go. But I want to divert your attention to this real quick, Norm. New York Times came out, this happened right during the holidays, came out December 26, talking about new minimum wages in the new year, talking about, right now, 5 states, including California, New York, Oregon, and Washington, D.C., lawmakers are now considering proposals in 2016 to raise minimum wages to $15 an hour. What do you think about this?
I love it. It's the way to go. It's a stepping stone. It won't be $15 overnight, but it's coming. The flip side of that is there's currently 21 states that still have a minimum wage at $7.25. That's half of that's been there since 2009. And those states are poor states, like Alabama and Mississippi, where the people need nearly $20 an hour to meet their living expenses for one adult and one child, and they can't make it on $7.25. They just can't make it.
And I want to add this. Okay, so as Norma, as you said, these are poor states, Alabama and Mississippi, and even in these states, it still takes you $20 an hour to meet living expenses, as you said, for one adult with one child.
That's right.
Now, so if you can imagine, you have two adults who might have two children. It's very common nowadays, and they're both making $10 an hour. They can't make it, and they're good, hardworking people, and they still can't make it in places like Alabama and Mississippi. Forget places like Houston or New York City or, you know, Seattle or San Francisco, where you need, you know, $25, $30, $40 an hour.
That's right. And it goes up. You need to go up because a rising tide, as we've always said, floats all ships. When you raise the minimum wage, then the next guy in line, his wage is going to go up, and the next guy in line, his wage is going to go up. And it gives everybody more buying power in their local economy. That's what we need to accomplish in all of this, because otherwise, guess who's paying for the food, housing, clothing of the people that can't make it? The taxpayers. Everybody here that's on the line that's paying taxes, it's in your best interest to raise the minimum wage so that not only can you make more money, it's a self-interest, but that your economy can grow in your areas. The economies that are booming, like San Francisco, the Bay Area, and Washington, D.C., and New York, and Los Angeles, why are they booming? Because they have high minimum wages. They have high thresholds, and people are making money. And money that they can live on, which helps all of us because we don't have to support them with food stamps and health care, Medicaid, and other provisions, Section 8 housing, which all provide subsidies for them. So we can eliminate all that, but we need to stay the course. We need to stay with people in office. We need to keep a Democrat in the White House that can protect us. You know, we just had a case, a Solar City case, in front of the National Labor Relations Board. And we won that case there, but we're going to a court system that's stacked with judges that are pro-corporations. So I don't know how well we're going to do, but in that case, the National Labor Relations Board said we can continue to bring class actions for employees. Right now, you can't do that. And so you're on your own, and attorneys like me who have to also make a living from cases, I can't afford to take individual cases of wage theft. But I can't afford to take a group case of wage theft. That's why class actions are so important, because under the National Labor Relations Act, it allows you as individuals to file class actions. But the courts so far have not agreed with that situation, because right now the courts are still pro-employer, pro-corporation. And the only way we're going to get that to change is to stay the course with a Democrat in the White House.
Well, I want to stress this point, because you've said this numerous times. Corporations have a duty to themselves and their stockholders and stakeholders to make as much money as possible, and they vote with their pocketbooks. They do whatever they can to protect themselves and make it easier for themselves, including stopping people from suing them in a court setting or class action setting. A lot of places use arbitration now, and that's good for the company, bad for us. So my point being to this is that, again, it's about voting for what's best for you, voting with your pocketbook. I want to stress this enough, because a lot of people don't get this, that this is exactly what corporations do. It's not that it's wrong.
It's not wrong at all. This is an adversary system. The capitalism is a wonderful system. It's the best economic system in the world. We all should embrace it, because capitalism gives you the right to succeed and the right to fail. But corporations, they're there to succeed for their shareholders, the people that put up the money to invest in the company, to make money for themselves as shareholders. And the officers and directors, their responsibility, their duty is to their shareholders. And unless the laws change to get them to have to pay more for labor, they're not going to do it, and they shouldn't.
Right, and they shouldn't have to. That's right.
They shouldn't. And so that's why, as you say, everybody's got to vote, because we got to have people in office that are going to be pro-people. instead of pro-corporations. We need people in office that are going to help us get there, not with Bernie Sanders-type socialism, but with Hillary Clinton-type capitalism that has an emphasis on supporting people's rights to get us to the next level without destroying corporate rights to shareholders to make a fair share of the money that they should be making, which is all good. Everything is all good.
Absolutely. Norm Blumenthal, we're out of time. As always, it's good to have you on the show, and I'm excited about 2016. Looking forward to getting updates from you. Norm Blumenthal, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Bert. Happy, healthy New Year to everybody.
Good stuff there from Norm Blumenthal. Again, Norm Blumenthal is a consumer slash workers attorney. If you think that you're being mistreated by your company, you want to get his opinion on something, check him out at BAM, B-A-M, as in Mary, BAM, lawca.com. That's BAMlawca.com. Norm Blumenthal will talk to you for free. Hey, good things happening. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Keith Kotner. Keith Kotner, after helping thousands around the world, became more successful. Keith realized what good it is to be successful if you aren't living a healthy lifestyle to ensure longevity and maximum happiness. He quickly discovered a gaping need in the health and wellness industry for an affordable at-home resource for fitness and nutrition mentorship. Once again, using his successful self-developed cause-focused business model, he launched livestreamingfitness.com. Livestreamingfitness.com. Live streaming fitness is on the fast track to quickly becoming an industry leader for a home-based fitness, nutrition, cooking resources for those looking to live a healthier lifestyle. Keith Kotner, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, absolutely. Well, you know what? I got to say this. You were kind enough to let me have access to live streamingfitness.com, and I loved it. I thought it was great. I was expecting a bunch of videos, which there is a bunch of videos. But what's really nice is it's videos from different people, and you can vote on who you like. So it really puts a little accountability or pressure on these fitness people to do good, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's a great program. I loved it.
Well, I appreciate that. We wanted to come up with something. Obviously, it's the new time of the year where everybody is thinking about their health and fitness. And my theory is you should think about it every day. And why don't most people think about it every day? Because there were obstacles out there that kept fitness from becoming a part of our lifestyle. So I wanted to create a lifestyle resource that would really help people think about it on a continual, consistent basis and make it so easy and so interactive that people would actually use it rather than having to drive to a gym, pay expensive memberships. Like all things, the easier things are to use and the more affordable they are. My hope and my cause was that more people would start taking more control of their health, which, as you know, is a huge struggle in our nation today.
Absolutely. And you know what's so funny to me? for some reason, there's this massive disconnect. And here's my example. Right now, there's a lot of reports that saying that the fastest growing ailment in our society is lower back.
Yeah.
And so there's this disconnect that my back hurts, therefore I might need some pills, possibly some surgery. It isn't because I have bad posture. It isn't because I'm not training my core. It isn't because I'm not working out. It's like one has nothing to do with the other. And I think that live streaming fitness has the possibility of making that connection where when somebody says, you know what, my neck hurts, maybe I should start working out. Maybe I need to do something with my posture. Maybe it's, you know, let me go check with a fitness professional or a different type of professional versus looking for a pill, looking to numb the pain.
Well, you know, that's so funny you say it that way because you're so correct. There are so many different things that we come up against in our daily lives, whether it's back pain, a health issue, a struggle with our weight, our energy, our endurance. And that's why when we set out to start this company, and it's been over 2.5 years now, and it's just starting to go absolutely across the country like a raging fire, because we didn't just try to think about, oh, well, how can we be in the fitness industry? What other fitness thing can we come up with to get people's attention? That wasn't it.
Right.
We started with the things that you're talking about, causes that people, struggles with people that wrestle with on a daily basis, and say, well, why do people still wrestle with these things in today's world? When you, like you said, well, maybe I should work out. Well, I don't have $100 a month for a family membership to a gym. Maybe I should get a nutritionist. Well, not everybody can afford, you know, $80 to $95 an hour for a nutritionist or a personal trainer. And so we did what you just said. We thought of all these different things that people struggle with, and then we wanted to create a resource, and that's what most people don't get. The outcome of us being a cause-driven business model builder was live streaming fitness. We didn't think about how can we be in the fitness world. We thought about how can we help more people live a healthier lifestyle, and live streaming fitness, a resource for live interactive classes that you can, you know, just like in Facebook, you can interact and comment and chat with the trainers and the nutritionists. And basically we call it philanthropy through education, providing this level of education and mentorship to people who want it, that struggle with the things you mentioned, you know, in a very easy, accessible way for what we call the power of 990. For $9.90 a month, you can have access to it on your iPad, your phone, your TV, all those different sources. So people have something to turn to when they're struggling with the things like you just described.
And you know, what's amazing to me, and this goes to show you the difference when you're cause-driven versus pure profit-driven. And by all means, hey, we're all about making a profit. It takes money to run a nonprofit organization. It takes money to do good. It takes money to, you know, in our planet, it takes money. But here you are, you put together this program that you could have easily gotten, you know, $30, $40, $50, $60.
More.
Absolutely. When you start thinking about the live interaction, when you think about the fact that your whole family can do it. And what's really nice is that, you know, I'm an early riser / worker outer. I like to get my workout in first thing in the morning. So I could get up, I can go to livestreamingfitness.com, get my workout in. My kids, who wake up a little bit later or have a different schedule, that a lot of them like to work out after school, they can come home and they can
sure.
do their workout after school. And both, I have two 14-year-old girls that still live at home with me. And so they like livestreamingfitness.com because, again, there's a lot of stuff for them to do. And and I'm saying this because there's plenty there for, you know, I think just about every age group, right? Whether you're male
Absolutely.
Or female. But I started to say that it's a ridiculous price for $9.90. It is just a no-brainer, and it's like you were saying also, the fact that you can do it on your laptop, you can do it on your computer, you can do it on your phone, you can do it anywhere. So especially now when we have this cold weather, a lot of us aren't getting out. We're putting it off, right? This is a great way.
Oh, you got cold weather, you got rain, you got traffic, yes. you got gas, you know, you got the nanny you got to get if you want to go to the gym and leave your kids at home, the babysitter. We wanted to turn something that would really, like you said, be powerful for the entire family, not just the husband and wife, but we have mommy and me classes, daddy and me classes, classes for young people. Then, of course, even though our focus is live streaming fitness classes, you and I both know our health is really two halves, fitness and nutrition. That's why we have the nutritional
yeah.
shows. We have cooking courses. So you can really have an access for the whole family. You might use it to work out in the morning, and your spouse might use it in the evening to cook you a healthy dinner. And
well,
your kids may use it to stay healthy as well.
Absolutely. So check this out. So my I have a daughter. As I said, I have two twin daughters, and one of my twins is into cooking. So she found one of the recipes on livestreamingfitness.com, and she shared it with us. She cooked it, made it for us for dinner. You know,
did you
that
enjoy
itself
it?
Is, yes, it was good. It was good. I mean,
she
cooked it all on her own, and it was wonderful. And so. Look, any time that you can get your kids to make you dinner, that commercial, that MasterCard commercial, right? You know, $9.99 or $9.90 for livestreamingfitness.com. Your daughter makes you dinner, you know, priceless, right?
Priceless.
So no, it's got everything there, and I want to talk about this. I want to clue everybody in on this. So classes are led by certified trainers and includes things like body sculpt, boot camp, core circuit, kickboxing, Pilates, yoga, tons of stuff there. Much more, just tons of stuff. My family, we love P90X. The problem with P90X is that you have to already be in pretty good shape to take on P90X, and so it's not for everybody. I would say that P90X is probably for, you know, the 10 or 20% that are already in shape. The masses really will respond well, I think, to livestreamingfitness.com because, as I just mentioned, you have anything from a beginner to an extreme. You have the boot camp, the core circuits, the kickboxing. You have all the stuff. I love yoga. I'm a big believer in yoga, and so it's got that. It's got everything you need for every fitness level.
Well, you know what? I love what you said about P90X. I have nothing to say. We're not competing and trying to make other companies look bad. I love P90X. I've used it myself as well and saw the results. But I always joke there's a reason why it's called P90X and not P365X. Because it's a program that helps you get to another level, but it's not something that can create a lifestyle, like you said, for the average masses of people. And we wanted to create a resource that would really be a lifestyle resource at the price point that you mentioned so it could be afforded by even the most modest budgets, because we wanted to put our cause, that's that cause again, in our Phil Frampic model. We wanted to put the power of health back into even the most modest family's capability, because everybody deserves to live a happy, fulfilled, healthy life.
Yes. Yes. And again, we started talking about this, with the, what do you call it? At the beginning of the segment, that it's cause driven. You could have been charged. You could easily charge $19.99 or $19.90 or $29.90. It's easily worth that. At $9.90, it is affordable by anybody. And, in the very beginning, we talked about this disconnect where people are having these ailments, bad neck, bad back, but they're not realizing it. They're having these issues because they have a bad health. What's the word I'm looking for? They're unhealthy. Their health needs to be, as you were mentioning before, it needs to be brought back in to an everyday kind of a thought, not something I'm going to do for the first 5 or 10 days of the new year, but it's something that we all have to, you have to keep your health up no matter where, no matter what.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so mobile. You can take it with you on a rainy day or stay in on a rainy day. You can take it with you on a walk. You can take it with you. You know, we were not too long ago, we were in a hotel and we actually use our own classes. We love to use our own product. I've lost 17 pounds over the last 5 months using our own classes, but my wife watched a class on a spin bike in a hotel fitness center. It's on the go. It's easily accessed for the entire family to create value from.
All right. So let me ask you this, Keith, because you started another program that was completely business oriented. So what got you going from business, this business training to all of a sudden health training? What was the catalyst, the aha moment that you said, hey, we have to do this?
Well, the catalyst was my wife sent me down to Keith. You're one of the best well-known speakers in the world. I travel all over the world speaking on leadership and professional development training. But she said, Keith, you're changing people's lives. for the same power of 990 in what we call MentorFish.com. She says, but Keith, don't you and shouldn't you be concerned with how long people can use these principles? You're not affecting the whole person. You're affecting their mind and their motivation. But what about their health and their body? And I said, babe, I never quite thought of it that way, even though health has always been an important role to her and I. She goes, Keith, in my opinion, she said, you have a responsibility with the giftings you've had and success you've had and the exposure you have to create something else that's another cause-driven model that mirrors what you've done in the leadership industry, which is making educational material that's important, whether it's leadership and business growth and motivational type stuff or health, fitness, nutrition, and cooking type stuff. You have a responsibility to do it here as well because you figured something else out that nobody else has. And that's that philanthropication. That's why we call it philanthropy through education. When we could charge more, like you've mentioned, when I could, and I have in the past, but we've changed that business model, but when we could charge more than we are, and we make it at such an affordable price point, it's almost like that in and of itself is philanthropy. When you do it at $9.90, when you could charge $19, $20, and $30, that is our philanthropic cause, and we're doing what you said. We're looking to impact the masses. Our cause-driven business model helps us make decisions in both live streaming fitness and our leadership company. Our causes make those decisions, not the bottom line. Now, as you said, everything has to have a business model to grow and to work, but that's not our first reason why we make decisions and how we do it. Otherwise, like you said, we never would have been at the power of 990 in either company. But the power of 990 keeps it about the end user, and it keeps our cause-focused business model in the forefront of how we reach people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I love it. No, I think it's great. And hats off to your wife for coming up with motivating you to help with the other side of the equation. That was awesome. We get a lot of inspiration.
Hey,
I
always give her credit because she always says, hey, did you tell people it was my idea? I said, yeah, babe, I always give you the plug. It was your idea. My wife, I wouldn't be where I'm at today without my wife.
I love it. I love it. Same here. Well, listen, Keith, we're out of time. I would love to bring you back and talk more about health and fitness as well as business. Keith Kochner, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you so much. God bless.
That good stuff there from Keith Kochner. And let me tell you guys, I want to direct you to livestreamingfitness.com. Go and check it out. It's totally worth it. I've been using it for a couple of weeks now. I totally love it. My kids love it. Check it out, livestreamingfitness.com. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be speaking with John Lee Dumas. And John Lee is probably the most, what do you call it? He's probably trained more people on podcasting than anybody else out there. He is a podcaster. If you're not sure what podcasting is or how it can help you, you're about to find out right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. Listen, you cannot swing a dead cat or open your email browser and not hear about somebody talking about the power of podcasting. The question is, a lot of us aren't sure what podcasting is, how to use it. My next guest is going to help you with all that. John Lee Dumas is the founder and host of Entrepreneur on Fire, an award-winning podcast where he interviews today's most inspiring entrepreneurs 7 days a week. John has produced over 1,000 episodes on Entrepreneur on Fire and generates, get this guys, generates $300,000 a month in revenue with over 1 million unique monthly listeners. EOF, Entrepreneur on Fire, has inspired Fire Nation to face their fears and take the entrepreneurial leap. John Lee Dumas, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Bert, I am excited to be here, my man. I'm prepared to ignite.
I love it. I love it. I love it. All right, so let's talk about your background story a little bit, because I understand that, first of all, you served as a captain in the Army. Is that right?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. I was in the Army for 8 years because I went to college on what's called an Army ROTC scholarship. And when I graduated back in 2002, Bert, I was actually the first class of commissioned officers post 9/11. So we knew it was going to be real deal Holyfield kind of stuff. So from 2002 to 2010, I served in the Army as an officer, did a 13-month tour of duty in Iraq as a platoon leader in the armor branch, which is tanks. So I was in charge of 16 men and 4 tanks in Fallujah, Iraq. So it was a pretty intense experience for a 23-year-old, but I learned a lot and have definitely applied a lot of those skills to my entrepreneurial ventures.
All right. So first of all, thank you so much for serving for 8 years. I think that's awesome. And so thank you for doing that for our country.
Yeah.
And so, okay, so after the military, you did what?
After the military, I had about 6 years, Bert, where I struggled. I went to law school because I thought that was like the right thing to do, and I quit after one semester because I hated it. I went to corporate finance and died a slow death in a cubicle. Then I went into commercial real estate, and you know, I had some fun there. I was in it for 4 years in both commercial and residential real estate here in San Diego and in my home state of Maine. But it just wasn't me. It wasn't something that I loved doing, and I was looking for that next thing. And being in real estate, you spend a lot of time in cars. So I was always in cars. And, you know, radio has its pros and cons, and I just wasn't in love with what I was hearing on the radio because I wasn't able to really control what I was listening to as much as I wanted to. So I drifted into this kind of new age thing called podcasting, and I just fell in love with the medium. It was something that I understood right away. Like some people just pick up languages really quickly. That's not me. I can't pick up or speak any languages, but I just got podcasting right away. I understood it. I said, this is the medium that I want to build my first entrepreneurial venture on. So after those 6 years of struggling in those three different traditional ventures, I launched EO Fire back in September of 2012.
I love it. I love it. So here you go. You go from the military. You're going to do what everybody tells you, quote, what you should do. Hey, go to law school or get into business. You do that. You don't like any of that. And I guess, as you said, it resonated with you when you started listening to podcasts. Something triggered in you and you said, hey, you know, I think I could do this. Because obviously you didn't have a background in broadcasting or journalism or anything like that, right?
Zero. No broadcasting experience, no communications, and no online presence either, Bert. I didn't have a Twitter account, a Facebook fan page. I was literally starting at ground zero.
Wow. Wow. All right. So So walk me through this. Okay, so now you're getting hooked by podcasting and you decide, okay, I'm going to do this. And you obviously stuck with the entrepreneurial side because you had some training in that area. And was it scary getting started? Was it scary saying, okay, this is my foray or my first step into podcasting? How was that for you?
It was terrifying, and I did a lot of things wrong, Bert, in my first couple months, but the one thing I did right saved everything, and that was I invested in myself. I found a mentor, and not just any mentor, because I think a lot of people do that wrong, but I found somebody who was currently where I wanted to be. Not a successful entrepreneur, not a successful businessman or woman. I found a successful business podcast host. And I went to her. Her name was Jamie Tardy. She had a great podcast and still does, called Eventual Millionaire. And I emailed her and said, Jamie, I love what you're doing. Your show is great. I'm looking to create a show that's similar. And I know that you mentor podcasters. Will you mentor me? I'm willing to invest in myself. And Bert, she took me on. And those 3 months that I spent were really the most valuable 3 months of my journey because I avoided so many pitfalls. I was able to just bypass and press the fast forward button on so many things that would have taken me forever to do. And I got a daily podcast out the door in 3 months.
Wow. Wow. Now, I want to back up a little bit, and I want everybody – I'm just going to kind of, repeat a little bit, feedback to you what I heard here – is that in order to avoid some of the pitfalls, in order to get going faster, you were serious enough to invest in yourself. You went and got a mentor or a coach that could help you go faster.
Absolutely.
And so I'm saying that because a lot of us are out there. We're not really sure what to do. We want to go in a certain direction, whether it's business or podcasting or writing a book or whatever. And this, to me, is a great way. It's a blueprint, if you will, to get going faster, avoid mistakes, is get yourself a mentor who's already doing what you're doing. And I love the fact that you said you went and found a mentor that's doing exactly what you wanted to do, which is to have a successful business podcast. You didn't go out to a radio guy. You didn't go out to, you know, a business person. You went specifically for somebody who could teach you to be prosperous in the exact industry and in the exact way that you wanted to do it.
I think the great phrase there to sum it up is find somebody who is currently where you want to be.
I like that. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about podcasting. Is podcasting, in your opinion, because you've been doing it now for 3 or 4 years, right? Is podcasting over with? I mean, in other words, has it hit its peak or is it still in its infancy? Where do you think podcasting is right now?
So to give podcasting kind of an analogy to the life of somebody, I would say that podcasting has just taken its first step as that little toddler. When I launched, it was in that little baby phase. I mean, it was that newborn infant that really couldn't even protect itself or do anything. And we're now just starting to figure things out. We're now just starting to actually get some legitimacy and some notoriety in this world. I mean, a couple quick examples that have just been amazing is, you know, people like Shaquille O'Neal and Stephen Colbert are launching podcasts. President Obama traveled to Marc Maron's garage to be interviewed by him on his podcast, saying that he was a huge fan of his podcast. We're really starting to see some people that are leaving really well-respected jobs in NPR and starting great companies like Gimlet Media is a great example. Alex Bloomberg left NPR as he was the host of Planet Money, some other great radio shows, to start his own podcasting company. And it's unbelievable success. They've raised millions of dollars. They're generating millions of dollars. Myself, I'm standing here right now, Bert, in my living room in San Diego, overlooking the San Diego Bay. I'm not going to lie to you, I have on a tank top and shorts right now because this is my outfit that I wear to work every single day. That's exactly 20 feet from my bed in my living room. And, you know, I generated over $4.5 million in revenue in 2015. And the beautiful part about it is 68% of that was net profit. So it's a very viable business if you can find the right niche, the right topic to talk about, build an audience around that niche, and then serve that audience in a powerful way with products, services, sponsorships galore.
I love that. I love it. Okay, so again, for recap purposes, you left corporate America. You had no broadcasting background, no communications background. You got hooked on podcasting. You said, okay, I'm going to go start a podcast. You got some training for 3 months. And at the end of that 3 months, you felt prepared that, okay, I'm going to start my podcast. And you launched Entrepreneur on Fire. 3 years later, you're doing over $4 million in revenue with a 68% profit margin. Is that right?
Yes. And it's myself, my girlfriend, who's in our spare bedroom working right now, and 4 virtual assistants. That's the team. So it's a very effective, very viable business that we've created here.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because something that you said, you know, is finding an area that you want to specialize in. So how do you go about deciding what is the best way to how do you go about finding your topic? What's the best how do you go about finding the best topic for you?
So a lot of mistakes that people make when they first start getting into podcasting is they look to where the success has already been. Now, again, when you're looking for a mentor, you want to find that person who's where you want to be. Absolutely. But for podcasting, you don't just want to see what's being successfully done right now and then try to emulate that, because that might not be you. You know, that's like a 5'4" person being like, you know, I want to play like Shaquille O'Neal. Like, no, you're not 7 feet. You can't do that. So you need to find what works for you. You know, maybe it's being a jockey or something. Who knows? You know, that's just kind of a weird sports analogy, but it's true, and I see this all the time in podcasting. So you as an entrepreneur need to step back and say, what is a topic that I am passionate about? Because this is a marathon, Bert. This is not a sprint. It takes time to build an audience. This is not an overnight thing. Nothing that's real success is in entrepreneurship and in life in general. So take the long-term view here. What's something that you're passionate about? What are you going to be excited to talk about, not just today and in 3 months, But in 3 years from now, for me, I was like, man, I love talking to successful entrepreneurs, pulling out their worst moments, talking about the lessons they learned from those, talking about their aha moment that they turned into success. These are things that I loved doing. I knew that from experience, and I knew that this is something that I could love doing, not just 3 months from when I launched, but 3 years. And now here I am over 1,200 episodes later of Entrepreneur on Fire, still rocking and rolling, still looking forward to every single interview that I do, getting to talk to a successful and inspiring entrepreneur. Now, there have been a lot of people who have tried to emulate what I've done, and they've burned out because they don't have that same love. They just tried to do it because I found financial success. But I've had a lot of other people who I've mentored or who have joined my community, Podcasters Paradise, who have said, you know what, I don't necessarily want to interview entrepreneurs, but I want to interview, you know, health professionals. And I just heard Keith on earlier on your show, like that is another niche. That's another direction to go. There's so many different ways that you can go to create a show, but it needs to start with what are you passionate about? What do you want to learn more about? What do you want to become the authority figure in? Like what value do you have to share to the world through your show? Find that topic and then start creating.
And this goes back to the old saying, it's been around forever, and that is do something that you love to do, and eventually the money follows, right? Oprah used to say, or still says, follow your bliss. And I like what you said about some people who are trying to emulate you because they were doing it for the money. Hey, if John is making a bunch of money, so can I. And but as you said, it took time. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. And if you don't have a love and a passion for it, then you are going to burn out. You're going to move on to the next quick cash strategy, right?
Exactly.
All right, so let's talk about equipment. For podcasting, as you just mentioned, you're in a tank top and shorts in sunny San Diego. So what do I need to get a podcast started?
Yeah, to kind of complete that picture too, I'm barefoot. I'm on an anti-gravity mat because I'm at a standing desk right now. So let me tell you, anybody that spends a lot of time on their feet, if you're standing ever, just go to Amazon, type in gravity mat. It is a game changer. I don't even know how I used to stand before without being on this mat. It's such a game changer. I love it so much. So equipment, this is something that holds people back, Bert, and it just shouldn't, because equipment is no barrier for podcasting. All you need is a computer with an internet connection, a microphone, and then recording and editing software, those three things. So almost everybody listening to me right now, I'm sure, has some form of a computer, a tablet, and by the way, even a smartphone. It works fine for this as well. Now, the next thing you need is a microphone. And my recommendation for a microphone is called the ATR-2100. This is $60. Again, you can just go to Amazon, type in ATR-2100, you'll have delivered to your doorstep a USB microphone. Now, what does that mean? That means, hey, that can just plug into your computer through the USB port. And now right. You have an incredibly great sounding microphone for $60. It's a game changer. I absolutely recommend it. It's my number one recommended mic when you combine quality and cost. Now you're moving into recording and editing software. And this is the only part that really remains and the part that holds a lot of people back, but this is simple. I do 100% of my interviews, all 1,200 have been over Skype. So I will call up my guest on Skype. It's a Skype-to-Skype call, and I record directly into Adobe Audition. Now, a lot of people know Adobe. They have a lot of great products like Photoshop and Premiere, et cetera. Audition is like their audio recording special. So I just call someone up. My Skype is connected to my Audition. As we're talking, it's being recorded after it's done. I do any edits that need to happen, add an intro, add an outro, and I'm done. And one of the beautiful things about podcasting, Bert, and we might get more into this later, but I record 8 interviews on one day. Every single Tuesday, I do 8 back-to-back interviews. I start at 9 a.m., and then on the hour, every hour, I'm doing one interview with a successful entrepreneur, and I'm done at 5 p.m. Now, a lot of people are like, that's crazy. You do 8 interviews in one day, and I'm like, it kind of is, but you need to look at it like a marathon runner looks at running. You don't go on and run a marathon overnight. I mean, I built up to being able to do 8 interviews in a single day, but now that I'm able to do that, I record all 8 interviews, and then I'm able to schedule them out so that I have the other 6 days of the week to look at other parts of my business, which is why I've been able to build a 7-figure business in just a couple of years.
I love it. What a great strategy. Think about that. You work really, really hard one day. And I'm not saying that you're not working hard the other days, but you have this Tuesday where you're really busting a hump. You get all these shows done. You're good to go for the week as far as shows go. It frees you up mentally to, as you said, focus on other things. When you're doing it on a daily basis like I do, that creative energy takes up time. I like this idea of recording everything. We record our Friday show on Thursday, so I do two shows on Thursdays, and it's amazing not having to do the show on Friday, how much, the freedom that gets. So I may have to take that strategy and start doing more recordings on a specific day, because I could see that just really allowing you to focus for a day or two or three or four straight on just your other business ideas.
I think a really important part here is Parkinson's Law, which is tasks will expand to the time allotted. Now, a lot of people are like, that's crazy. You have 8 interviews scheduled for tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah. They're like, well, how are you going to do that? And I'm like, well, guess what? At 6 p.m. tomorrow night, I will be done with 8 interviews. That's it. That's how I look at it. At 6 p.m. tomorrow night, I'll be done with 8 interviews. And if I had 3 interviews scheduled, guess what? At 6 p.m. tomorrow night, I'd have 3 interviews completed. So I just look at the end goal. I say, you know what? I'm allotting 8 hours to do 8 interviews, and they're going to get done. And it's going to be 8 hours, and I'm going to put the nose to the grindstone and make this happen, freeing up the other 6 days of my week to do other things.
I love it. I love it. John, we're out of time. I would love to bring you back and talk more about podcasting, entrepreneuronfire.com, where you guys can find out more about John and his team. His team being him, his girlfriend, and 4 virtual assistants. And John, in just 3 short years, is ramped up, generated over $4 million in annual revenue. John Lee Dumas, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Bert, it's been a blast, brother.
Thank you. All right, good stuff there about podcasting. And John Lee Dumas is the man to go to. Check him out. It's amazing that this guy who had no background in communications, no background in broadcasting, 3 years later has a multi-million-dollar lifestyle business that he does in shorts and tank top. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with executive and career coach Susan Peppercorn right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You
want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All righty then. We are back. Good stuff. My next guest is probably going to be very, very exciting to some of you guys out there who are in the executive position or possibly looking for your next job or possibly looking for a job right now. New Year's is one of those. Or January is one of those months where a lot of changes take place. Susan Peppercorn is an executive and career coach and founder of Positive Workplace Partners, a Boston-based consultancy. Susan specializes in working with executives making a career transition through a choice or circumstance and helps them go from surviving to thriving. She's a certified executive and positive psychology coach. Susan Peppercorn, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. I'm delighted to be here.
All right, so let's talk about this. I want to kind of get a little background on you. How did you go from whatever you were doing to executive career coach?
So that's a really great question, and I will start off by telling you that my own career has been quite circuitous. I've done a number of different things. Most of my career was spent in high technology sales and marketing, which I will also say I did not particularly enjoy. And the reason, Well, it was actually a motivation for me to enter the coaching field and work with people who are not particularly happy or not feeling like they're thriving in their work. I didn't feel like I was thriving in my work, and I didn't have anybody to help me. So it was a great motivator for me to help others and to not find it as difficult, to make it easier for other people than it was for me.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I like that. And that, to me, that's give back, so to speak. I mean, a lot of us have either written a book or gotten into a career because of the experiences that we've had, and we wanted to help other people because that experience was commonplace.
Exactly. And there actually are ways in which people can find greater satisfaction in their work, either if they want to stay in the job that they have or if they want to make a transition. It's not rocket science, but a coach can really be helpful in this process because they can provide A, tools, and B, an outside perspective.
Well, you know what? Here's the way I look at it. Hopefully, you're not going to have a transition every month. Hopefully, you're going to have a transition a few times in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is the transitions, hopefully, are so infrequent that you don't have the opportunity to become an expert at it, right? I mean, if I wanted to, I could change my own brakes. As a, you know, when I was a young man, I changed my own brakes all the time to save money. I could change my own brakes, but it's easier for me to take it to somebody else who can do it better, faster. So the way I look at, if I was in a transitional scenario now, it kind of makes sense to have somebody who does this for a living, who can see things that I don't know or I can't see, and kind of help me through this transition situation because I don't know everything I don't know.
Well, that's absolutely true. And what I can also say to you is that there's something very counterintuitive about the whole job search process because, you know, if you look at all these postings that are online, no matter where you look, they're all over the place. People think,
right,
okay, all I need to do is just, you know, submit a resume to a website and, you know, the next thing I know, I'm going to get called for an interview. But what people don't understand is that it's not the way it works. And so, you know, to your point earlier, you can waste a lot of time. You know, I wouldn't try to change the brakes on my car. But similarly, if somebody wants to make a transition, a lot of times they come to me after they've spent a lot of time not getting the results that they want, and they're very frustrated. And the job market in the way to go about looking has changed. So because, you know, job changes are usually infrequent, if someone hasn't made a job change in the last 10 years, the landscape has totally changed. And, you know, so how would you know? You know, what I say to people who come to me, I'm not an expert. I couldn't do the work you're doing.
Right.
But I can help you because I'm an expert in my field.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about this.
Sure.
I want to get your thoughts on the most important things to do immediately after being laid off from mm-hmm. your job.
Okay. So if someone is in a situation where they get laid off, here's generally what happens. You get called into your manager's office. There's someone there from human resources.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you your job is being eliminated or whatever the explanation is. You're handed a fat packet of papers and your head is spinning. Depending on the industry and the level of the person in that industry, sometimes they're told that that very day is their last day. So here are some things that I recommend. First of all, just take a deep breath. What people don't realize is that even though the economy is good, we're not in 2008. Layoffs happen every single day due to reorganizations, corporate restructuring, and the like. So you're not alone if it happens to you. Number two is don't sign anything immediately. Take it home, read it over, maybe have a lawyer. If there's a severance agreement involved, have a lawyer read it over. And make sure that you get everything off your computer. Because if that day is going to be your last day, they will clean the hard drive of your computer. And if you have contacts, performance reviews, anything that you could use for your, you know, future job search, get it. And, you know, and don't leave it there. Don't expect the company or organization to give it to you. They won't. And the last thing I would say is go home. If this happens in the morning, don't stick around and do your job. Take the rest of the day off. This is really tough to process, and tomorrow will be another day. But don't feel that you have to stay there finishing up the work, your work for that day.
Yes, I like that. I really like the tip on not signing anything until you've had a chance to review the paperwork, maybe get an advice from an attorney. I love the tip about quickly going to your computer and getting copies of important documents that you may need, such as job reviews, such as emails that might let people know about your performance or things of that nature. And then the other thing is, you know, as you said, it doesn't really matter what the economy is. Layoffs happen all the time for various reasons. It's not always your fault. I mean, you know, sometimes when we get fired, we automatically think, well, what could I have done? And here's what I find interesting. The difference between getting laid off or fired immediately like that is usually when you're screwing up a little bit here and there, that shows up either in a performance review or your supervisor or manager will tell you, hey, Bert, you know, you need to get better in these areas, right? And so they want you to correct your behavior. That's good. Now, when they walk in and say, hey, we're letting you go, today's your last day because the grass is green and the sky is blue,
mm-hmm.
most of the time there's nothing that you could have done.
Right. And I'll add one thing to that, Bert. I have seen situations where people have been given the opportunity of having what they call being put on a performance improvement plan.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes those are bogus. I won't say to you that happens all the time. Sometimes they are sincere. But oftentimes there are larger things afoot. And I will give you a way that the audience can evaluate what's going on. If your performance has been good and, you know, you have consistently good reviews, you're a go-to person, you know, for questions on various subjects, and suddenly your boss comes to you and they say, Susan, your performance is no longer what it used to be. That's a signal that something is not right. And this happened with a recent client of mine. And it turns out that there was actually a reorganization where three different groups were folded into one. And he had been there the longest, and that equals most highly paid. And so he was laid off. But in large companies, sometimes they have to put an employee on a performance improvement plan. But that performance improvement plan better be specific and needs to say what specific behavior has to change, or there's something fishy.
Yes. No, I like that. What a great tip and kind of a nice red alert, so to speak. Okay, so let's talk about this. How do I explain a job transition to a prospective employer or networking contact?
Okay, so another great question. And the first thing that I would say is never, ever, ever badmouth the person you were working for or the organization you were working for, no matter how well-deserved your anger might be. People don't want to hear complaints at bad mouthing. So your goal, and you've got to sometimes have to fake it until you make it, is to remain positive. So that's number one. If if your layoff was a result of a downsizing or a reorganization, just say that. It's a fact. It happens all the time. And what I also advise is, you know, when people ask that question, you know, why are you looking for a new job or why are you out of work? What they're really asking is, was it because of your performance? Is there something you're not telling us? So if you can say that, you know, I had, you know, 8 years of great performance reviews and I have references that I would be happy to provide should we get to that point, is also a good thing to incorporate in your explanation. Finally, I would also say, say what you learned. You know, no matter how difficult a company can, you know, your experience at a company may have been, sometimes we learn from the most difficult experiences. So explain what skills you've gained, what experiences you had, and what you're looking forward to in your next step.
Ask you this. I don't know if you're a movie buff or not, but, you know, I think in October, Robert De Niro was in a movie called The Intern, where he plays somebody who's finished one career. He's older in life, and so he is, you know, his wife's passed away, and so he wants to get back into it. So he starts at the very bottom as an intern. What's your take on interning? Is that a good move, bad move?
So if someone is trying to switch industries or switch careers, I think it's a fantastic move. I'm actually working with somebody now in their late 50s who is looking specifically for an internship. He's been a CEO of a company. He's had a very successful sales career. And, you know, he's looking at making this transition that he has no experience in. And he's like, you know what? I don't expect to come in at the top. I don't want to come in at the top. I've been there. I've done that. And that's actually what he's looking for. So, you know, I think if you're staying in the same industry and you're building on the successes that you've had, I don't think necessarily that an internship is the way to go. But definitely, if you're trying to make a transition into a new field or a new industry, without a doubt, it's a great strategy.
Yeah, I like that. And again, both, I think both are very good tips there. If you're moving into a different direction or different career, an intern makes proper sense or a lot of good sense there. If you're staying in the industry, it's probably going to hurt you a little bit to intern. Let me ask you this. What are some other best practices for making a successful transition?
Well, I think when especially if someone has experienced a layoff, no matter how kindly the organization took pains to be considerate about it, our egos take a hit. It's just natural. And it's natural to think about, what did I do wrong or what could I have done differently? And oftentimes the answer is nothing. So I think that there are a few things that someone can do. One is, if you're really feeling in a rut and you're feeling like, you know, I don't really know what I'm good at, maybe my skills are stale, maybe I don't know what direction to go in. One of the things that I recommend is something called, and I use with clients, the Reflected Best Self exercise. It was actually developed at the University of Michigan Business School by a number of the professors there. And basically, it's very simple. You ask 10 to 15 people, you can do this through an email, but the Ross Business School also has this in a nice package if you want to send it out that way. But basically what you do is you ask 10 to 15 people to provide information about when they've seen you at your best. What were you doing? What strengths were you using? And in what ways was what you did meaningful to them? And you know, you send this out to people and you ask them, you know, could you please respond back to me within, you know, a week's time. And most people expect that the results that they're going to get are going to be very different. But actually, that's usually not the case. Usually there are themes that run across the responses because there are strengths that every one of us has that we tend to take for granted because we're good at them. But other people notice them. So the thing you want to do is when you get the feedback from others, identify common themes. What were the strengths, you know, what were the three or four strengths that people mentioned over and over again? What were the types of things that I was doing when they mentioned these strengths? And then the last step is to write a description of yourself that summarizes and distills this information. And this should weave the themes from the feedback together with your own self-observations into a composite of who you are at your best. And then finally, you can take this and design a personal job description to build on what you're good at. So if I might share an actual experience of how this worked.
Sure.
I was working with a client in a position, a relatively high position in a health insurance company. And she had been there almost her entire career, with the exception of 3 years. She was at this employer for about 14 years. She knew that she was tired. She was burnt out. She didn't feel valued anymore. And she had some thoughts about what she wanted to do, but she kept second-guessing herself. So she would say, well, I can't go in that direction. I can't go in that direction. Here are all the reasons why. So I asked her if she would be willing to try this exercise. And she said, sure. And so she did it. She sent it to 15 or 20 people in her case. And what came back was these responses with amazing consistency that convinced her that what the idea that she had of what she wanted to do as a next step, which actually was to become an executive coach, was right for her, because that's what people kept saying to her over and over again. And as a result of that, she applied to she applied and enrolled in an executive coaching program, a very prestigious one. She got accepted, and she's starting next month. But without the validation from people that she knows and trusts, she would never have made that decision on her own. So that's one best practice that I would recommend.
I love that. It's a great story. And Susan, we're going to end on that note because we're out of time. But that is awesome. Great strategies today, Susan. Thank you so much for stopping by and sharing them with us. Love to have you back and talk more about transition from career transitions. Susan Peppercorn, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you, Bert. I appreciate the opportunity. Bye now.
You bet. Good stuff there from all our guests today. It's an incredible, incredible way to start the week. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.